Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the April 13 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the WASDE numbers were a bit of a yawner earlier in the week, but the weather played havoc with the corn crop. We'll find out what our analysts are thinking about the 2012 prospects today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossi, the Executive Vice President of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson, also from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, let's start our discussion today with this question. Given the projected rainfall over the weekend, Bill Mayer, do you suppose Chicago corn futures will be in for a second down week next week?
I would have to say yes to that, Todd. At least I think we'll start out that way. I don't know whether we'll end the week down. You know, 5 days of trading, a lot of things can happen. But we had a pretty negative move this week on the charts. We went up, tried to get back through that uptrend line and couldn't get through it and came back down below it. So I think we're going to start out that way. The exception might be if we don't get any rain or, you know, a lot less than what people are expecting.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Doggone, I knew he was going to take what I was going to say. No, my answer would be it's only if we do realize it. And even at that, looking at the radar today, the rain seemed to be falling apart again over at the Iowa line, which is something we're all too familiar with from last year. And, you know, rains over this weekend, yes, that would be great to get a crop started. Now, you know, the whole thing is it's going to take very timely rains to keep us going. I talked to a client today, I think this is of interest, who is part of an 11,000-acre water control district. He said last year they were running through $30,000 worth of fuel every 7 to 10 days to control the water. They had a 40-foot-wide, 10-foot-deep channel that was full to the top. This year, from January to April, they used less fuel than 2 days worth from last year. They can see the bottom of the canal and all the trash that's in it. And he's also planted corn that they haven't even been able to touch the fields in over 3 years. So I think a weekend rain, yeah, we might start out lower, but ultimately we have to have a lot more than that.
Kurt Kimmel, a second lower week in a row?
Well, pretty well did a good job. It's definitely a weather type of trade as we move along in here. I think it's going to keep a cap on the market, and that is new crop. I think old crop's a little bit different story. We kind of feel there's still some demand underneath the market for old crop corn. China comes in and keeps getting some small cargoes on these price breaks in here. So we continue to feel the bull spread situation could be the case from here on out.
Okay, May corn this week, $6.64 and a quarter on the high, the low at $6.24 and a quarter. Settlement price was down 29 cents at $6.24 and a quarter. December futures at $5.37, a 13 and a quarter cent loss. Old crop, really?
Well, we got everything on the defensive this week. I mainly think it was probably more of the outside influence along with the weather, too. We saw concerns in China, even though we don't think it's that serious. Spain came up on the headline news. We lost the bullish enthusiasm from the speculative crowd. When you look at the major players, it was speculative selling. We'll see if that does follow through in the next week.
It appeared to be a lot of long liquidation. Is that right from the spec side?
Well, yes, what we're seeing basically, if you looked at this week's open interest, traditional funds shifted from being long corn, and they increased their position over in the bean side. So they were moving out of corn and into beans. They're always looking for a place to make more money, and beans are more positive. You know, the fact that North Korea shot off a missile, even though it failed, certainly didn't help the outside markets. You know, it's unrest in the world. You know, the GDP for China coming in at 8.1%, it was below their guesses, but in one way that may actually help us, because I think that that's probably as low as we're going to go, and we'll see some stimulus come back in again, and that'll give the markets just more confidence.
Bill, earlier in the week, a pretty cold snap came through a good portion of Illinois. We had 5% of the crop in the ground at one point, and then we jumped another 12% this past week. Are there many concerns about the corn that has been planted in the state of Illinois?
Well, I think there's really two approaches to that. One is if you're a farmer out there in the field that has some of that corn, and the other is what the traders in Chicago and around the world think about it. And I think the trade in general is not too concerned about that. They feel like, number one, the damage, you know, the percentage planted was fairly small that got damaged, and number two, that there's still time to replant it if a person needs to replant it. You know, if it's your own personal situation, it can be a lot more serious. And one of the things that I've seen is it's typical from the standpoint of a spring freeze that, you know, it doesn't freeze every other plant to reduce population. It freezes an area here, and over here there's 100% left. And, you know, it's not as easy to make that decision on replanting as what it may be.
Do you think it's possible that this one, that the freeze might come back next week at some point once we get a better handle on how much damage, if any damage, has been placed on the corn crop in the state?
Oh, I definitely think that they're going to be looking to see once. Well, number one, you know, it's a circumstance where when you're not freezing everything off, it just doesn't make the news very, very often. And so they're going to sit back and wait. But I think, you know, when Bill talks about taking out part of a field, I think that's more serious a lot of times than taking out a whole field, because it reduces yield. And now what you've got is a field that's going to start to look like the ocean. You know, you've got different maturities because it's got to start over again. And so I think it'll come back in. One of the things that was bugging us this week, too, was just that the index funds were doing a lot of rolling. You know, and when they're shifting around, that gives us kind of a more of a negative tone to the market than positive.
It's not so much an early April freeze. It's an early May freeze in the market.
Yes.
Well, I was in Knapsaker on Friday afternoon. I had a discussion with him. He reminded me that this happened in 2005 and that, roughly speaking, the corn crop was in the same space then as it is now. And, well, we can take a look and see what happened, although he was a bit more concerned about the cold weather this time around and whether the crop might come back out of it.
It was actually a few nights in a row down below to freezing point that was the issue. It was not just one night.
Yeah, and Tuesday right. night was pretty cool. But I think the bottom line here is that we still have a long ways to go before we get to the bin. And we can, I mean, I did some work on that this week here for a letter that we sent out. And, I mean, you can come up with a really pretty tight carry out on corn or a very burdensome supply of corn, depending, just holding your acre steady and, you know, adjusting your yield within a reasonable range of yield. So we got some volatility left in this market, I believe. But for right now, I think the trade is kind of looking at things as very positive from a growth standpoint.
Well, and I think, you know, you always have to take into account, that's why USDA has a 10% deviation on their prop projections. How do we know at this point in time what's going to happen? We don't. The thing I'll say is, in my experience, if we're going to plant 96 million acres or close to it, it's going to be tough to get 164. We're going to have really good weather. And if you go and look at 2005, we had an extended fall in the upper Midwest that averaged 80 degrees in September, or we would have never had the crop that we did, and we never sent the records that we did.
Okay, given what happened this week in Chicago, that we had a loss of 29 cents in the old crop corn, we're sitting at 624 and a quarter. Are you willing to continue to bet Vegas style on what's left in the bin?
As long as it's a small portion, that's the nature of
well,
the beast.
Well, I'm assuming
here.
A small portion, but I know there are 2 and 3 year crops out
some,
there, too.
Yeah. There are some large quantities out there. But yeah, from a risk management point of view, I think you got to be fairly well sold up. And this break is an excellent opportunity to come back in and get some a call option coverage on for that summer rally if it would happen.
Right, I agree. Or even doing the July Dece spread. You know, I think buying the July and selling the Dece is a, you know, it's a great spread. It's not as risky as just being wide open, and I think it's a great way to do it. It's just one of those things, you know, gambling stocks used to be about 10%. You talk to guys this year, we're talking 25% with a lot of people. And I heard it again today from at least three people. I'm not selling until I see $7 futures.
I think the March lows could come into play, though. We got down about, 604, I think it was, something like that, in March on the front month. And I think that could come into play. That's, you know, another 25 cents lower or so.
Roll right into the new crop corn for me.
Well, I guess I'd kind of see the same type of downside potential on the new crop. We've got a fairly similar-looking chart there. But I think that you probably do keep some weather premium in the new crop. We've really taken some of that out where maybe we do have a lot of this stuff we've been talking about earlier as far as the growing season goes that I'm not sure we have enough weather premium in there right now.
When you look at new crop, what are you thinking for prospects at this point in terms of price over maybe the next, during the planting season?
Well, the December futures, you know, back towards this 550 area or so, if not 560, hopefully, is probably going to offer some selling opportunities, barring no real weather scare. Short term, I think you got to play the negative side on ideas that things could go well and we're going to have some good production. Over the near term, I think strength back to those levels need to be sold.
Yeah, I think you definitely need to. If we get back into the 570 area, I'm still not necessarily willing to go out and just sell futures there, but I certainly would look to do some option positions in there to give yourself some opportunity to the upside. You know, if you look at the big picture, I think you could probably see December corn down to 450 or up to 850, just depending upon what happens with the weather, what happens everywhere else. You know, we're in a pretty wild situation because of the fact that we have a lot of dryness in a lot of places.
Well, I can hardly wait to see your range on soybeans then. May beans, $14.52 for the high, the low at 14.15. Settle, you are thinking about it, right? Because mm-hmm. you're up next. 14.36 and 3/4, up 2 3/4. Novi beans, a new crop, 13.61 and 3/4, down 19 and 3/4. So old crop up and new crop or lower. Got a range?
You want a range on both of them? I don't think they're going to be a whole lot different, to be absolutely honest with you. I think that, you know, $15 was the high on new crop beans. I don't see any reason why we couldn't go and challenge 15 and maybe even hit 16. The big key to that is going to be how many beans are going to be planted after wheat. You know, so the wheat crop is going to be a guide to us. And you know, if you put on 2 million acres of beans right now and bring them in at the levels that we're at, with the demand we have, you could potentially still only be looking at an 80 million bushel carryout. And when you look at ERS coming in and saying that they think in the next 10 years, China's going to go and increase their imports by 59% to 90 million metric tons of beans, that's 80% of what they expect the global production to increase. And so I think even though that doesn't drive today's market, it's certainly always in the background.
I think, you know, if you look at a $13 to $14 range on November soybeans, I think that's a pretty good range to expect. I think we found last year that when we get above that $14 mark, we tend to cut back usage and encourage a lot of South American acres.
We feel that there's a bull spread story developing in the beans. We feel the old crop's going to continue to be support from Asian demand and even world demand in general due to the smaller South American crop. However, new crop, 2-3 weeks ago, we found that there was quite a few guys that took back some corn and went and got some bean seed. They took advantage of $13 plus cash beans at the elevator. So therefore, we feel we've picked up some extra bean acres. Then, like Jackie said, we feel double crop acres is going to be on the rise, barring the weather stays decent.
Given weather staying decent, does that mean if we get to the $14 cash that you're all for new crop thinking that might be a good place to make sales?
Well, I think you got to use a scalp selling approach or else have a floor under you in case the thing rolls over. But I'd sell use November futures, some at 14, 14 and a half, and 15. I think you got to have some orders above the market in case something goes nut. Now, the worst fear is something happens in the world where we lose this investor confidence because the spec lead crowd's all in the bean market right now. And you go, boo, they'll be gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. I think the key is if you're making the decision to switch corn acres over to bean acres, you better be doing something on those. You either got to go out and make cash sales or you get them covered because you made that decision because of that price. So you better protect it.
We've been using the approach of making small incremental sales into the rally as it moved higher. I think you can continue to do that. If you get to a percent sold that's you're uncomfortable with, then you've got to look at maybe buying puts, selling calls, or some type of strategy like that.
May soft red winter wheat this week, a 653.25 top, bottom at 618.5, a settlement price there at 623.5, down 15 cents. July at 630.25, finished 16 cents lower. Live cattle futures at 120.52.5 are up $2.20 on the week. The feeders at 150.52.5, $1.80 higher, and the lean hog settled at 82.75. $1.75 lower for the week. I took a picture of a wheat field near Mount Pulaski, Illinois, earlier in the week, and it was just beautiful despite the cold weather. Do we have a nice wheat crop on the horizon, do you think, Jackie?
Well, I think, we're certainly not the driver for the wheat crop. Do we have a nice wheat crop? One thing I know about wheat is can be a fooler. It doesn't necessarily always show its damage right away the first day.
We still got ample world supplies, and that's still going to be a burden until we clean those up.
Cold weather could have more effect on the quality than the quantity, and I think that's probably a little bit bearish to corn in a way.
You're listening to the April 13 edition of Commodity Week. When we come back, we'll talk with Dan Bossy of AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. After the warmest March on record, cooler weather finally returned to Illinois. This week finished at 48.3 degrees, just 0.3 degrees below normal. Temperatures frequently dipped into the 20s and low 30s in central and northern Illinois. With everything running about 3 to 4 weeks ahead of schedule, there was some damage reported to corn, winter wheat, fruit crops, and home gardens. The southern third of the state escaped the freezing temperature for the most part. No significant rain was reported anywhere in the state this week. Meanwhile, the days with lots of sunshine, strong winds, and unusually low humidity levels really dried out the top few inches of soil. However, subsoil moisture is largely untouched. On Saturday, highs are expected to be in the mid to upper 70s throughout the state. Lows Saturday night are expected to be in the low 60s. It's more of the same on Sunday with highs in the 70s and lows Sunday night in the 50s and 60s. Cooler temperatures will prevail next week with highs in the 50s and 60s. Lows are expected to be in the upper 30s and low 40s. Rain is expected through Sunday with amounts of less than an inch in southern Illinois and between 2 to 3 inches in central and northern Illinois. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the April 13 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, also from Champaign, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. On the line from Chicago today is Dan Bossy of AgriSource Company. Dan, thanks for taking the time. You've traveled around the world more than once and have a good idea what China looks like and what their economy can and cannot do. What do you think for the next quarter and next fiscal year?
Well, you know, Todd, I was just there about 3 weeks ago doing grain conferences in Singapore and then, of course, spending some time with clients in China and other places. And the one thing that really struck me in this visit was the slowing of their economies. Everyone you talked to suggested that demand, at least for consumer goods, was in retreat. Now, that doesn't mean agricultural goods have to retreat here, but they were having some real difficulties managing inflationary pressures and their own economy. And although I'd like to think the Chinese will be more accommodative, their ideas of trying to maintain inflation somewhere between 2 and 3%, and also kind of busting, if you will, their real estate bubble and some of the high-end housing has really got them back on their heels. So I'm fearful that Europe and a slowing China is something we'll be dealing with heading into the end of the year.
Just to follow up on that, Dan, the way I understood the news today was that the GDP was at 8.1% instead of an expected 8.3%. Isn't that still a pretty good pace? Or, you know, can we expect, we're not expecting the growth to just slow down too much, are we?
Well, we're not. It's the lowest growth on a GDP rate in 3 years. Though most of us economists would suggest that a GDP rate of 7.5 or 8% is just demanded, or China will, because of, you know, the state-owned entity, will see kind of a backlash or recessionary type of attitude. So, you know, when we get China GDP rates below 7.5%, we all start to worry. Now, it is a managed economy. They do have a new, of course, premier taking over next January. That should be supportive. I do think there will be some stimulative cuts in both lending rates and banking reserves forthcoming. But I think you have to be careful here because China is trying to grow its economy from the inside out, and domestic consumers haven't had the wherewithal, if you will, to step up to the plate and make the kind of purchases and durable goods that will keep the Chinese economy humming along. So if you think about a world that has problems in Europe, Spain and Italy in particular, and then the Chinese and Brazilian economies are starting to slow, it's not the kind of environment that is bullish for commodities, and I'm now talking in a broad spectrum when we look forward.
You know, Dan, I'm gonna change it up a little bit, and I'd like your opinion on the Intercontinental Exchange launching those cash-settled grain contracts versus the CME groups, and what you think that might do, perhaps, to volatility.
Well, it's an interesting phenomena, Jackie. It's all about competition. It's all about rates. It's all about what the industry really wants. What I find very interesting is there's, of course, been this great debate within the hallways of the CME and the CBOT for the longest time that, you know, we still need a deliverable market so at the end of the day we can ferret out who's doing what and which player may have been the stopper and who did this. The ICE structure, if you will, has gone to a more of a structured cash-settled contract, which may appeal more to the big trading funds and to the investors. And so, you know, it is going to be kind of a fist fight. I believe that the CBOT slash CME will have the initial leg up here, but it's something worth watching. Mr. Sprecher and the ICE exchange have been very coy in doing this. I'm not sure, you know, 10 years from now what's going to be the result, but I do believe that lower rates and this increased competition is something that will be good for the industry and may include, of course, some world exchanges that, if it's done on a cash-settled basis, may be good for American and world agriculture on a general basis.
Dan, what's your outlook in here? Have we seen the spring highs for corn and beans?
We kind of think so. Maybe not so much on the bean market. We can say so on corn and wheat. We're most negative on those grains at the moment. You know, assuming no weather problems going forward, we believe that corn could slide back to 4.25, 4.5 in a new crop position for some kind of autumn low. The soybean market is, because of the South American drought, has a much more bullish posture, if you will. November beans could make it up to $14.50. Though I will tell you, as we look down the road and we're starting to do some of our surveys of our Brazilian clients and Argentinian clients, we're surprised at the expansion next year. I mean, we can think of a Brazilian soybean crop in the vicinity of 78 to 82 million metric tons, maybe Argentina 54 to 56 million metric tons. Those are big increases. So we all need to understand this was a supply-driven rally due to South American drought. There will be a short tail to this crop when indeed, of course, we get beyond the U.S. weather concern.
Can you take up some ideas floating around Washington, D.C., and what might happen or not with the ethanol industry as we move forward? For instance, will Washington be predisposed to allow U.S. EPA to open up to E15?
You know, Todd, I think as I walk around the hallways of Washington, and I did so at the Outlook meeting a few weeks ago, I did not hear many positive comments regarding ethanol. Most seem to be more focused on other things, such as natural gas and maybe a general policy program on what the U.S. should have as an energy platform. I will say this, that E15 has its potential, though it's going to take tremendous investment. I do not see, let's say, here in the metropolitan Chicago area, as gas stations switching out from their 10% to a 15% kind of blend, which would take tremendous investments in tanks and pumps. So it's 2 to 3 years out as a minimum. And I think you're right in bringing this out, because one of the major drivers of the bull egg market has been ethanol, and we now see that stagnating for the next 2 to 3 years at a minimum, even though the mandate may move higher. And that just doesn't engender, if you will, a corn market that needs to buy ever more acres. So with that being said, that's why now Southeast Asia and its economy becomes so important, because it is the second driver of the bull market. And we're concerned about both fronts and why we are becoming a little more bearish, if you will, particularly on the grains.
One other thing on ethanol. Is it possible to stave that off by doing an advanced biofuels swap, sugarcane ethanol for corn ethanol, exporting ours, importing the sugarcane ethanol, and using it as an advanced biofuel?
It is always possible, Todd. Of course, our friends in California have already been importing that advanced biofuel from Brazil, if you will. I think the problems that I have is that there's other fuels that may have unintended consequences. Now, the farm lobby is so strong, I do not expect this to happen, but you, of course, can make ethanol out of natural gas for somewhere around 90 cents a gallon today. A firm in Dallas has the patents on it. So, you know, when you're in Washington, you hear a lot of back talk, if you will, about why should we continue to subsidize what they believe is a mature industry already that they perceive that has raised food prices. So I just have this this feeling, if you will, that ethanol has seen its heyday. It's a mature industry. It'll continue to exist somewhere around 5 billion bushels of corn a year. But I'm not sure I would want to plan on any tremendous or significant future growth unless we can find a big export market for the excess ethanol we're now producing.
Dan, I got to ask you about the stocks while I have you on the phone here, the corn stocks. Are we, it seems like the USDA is just going to stick to their guns. Are they right? Are the ending stocks where we're going to end up, 800 million?
You know, it's a great question, and I think they are close to right. But I'll tell you this, that since the next stocks report isn't until the end of June, and July contracts go into delivery the day thereafter, it doesn't make any difference for a lot of us unless you're willing to play the delivery game in the July futures. And so I believe USDA will stay at 801 million bushels in both the May WASD and the June WASD. By July, you know, for the vast majority of us who can trade or who try to position, who cares? It doesn't make a lot of difference. As we model the first half of the year crop use feed residual, it still fits in the USDA's 4.6 billion bushel regime, so we can't argue too strongly with them. They're arguing, of course, that more wheat will be fed, there will be an increase of new crop corn availability because of early planting. We'll all have to see, but I think from a speculative or a farm perspective, if you're going to be looking at old crop corn, you need to have it moved by the 1st of July.
Dan, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
Dan Bossi is with AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Time now for a final word from our panelists in studio, including Bill Mayer.
I think on new crop corn, if you're not comfortable or don't want to sell the current cash levels, look for some innovative ways to lock in some floors with options.
Jackie Vakes.
I think that when you look at old crop corn, you really have to keep close track on basis. Basis is working hard to try and get it from you. And if we do go up to $7, you may not get paid as much as you would right now with the better basis.
And Kurt Kimmel.
I'd like to wish our good friend Paul Cooley a long and enjoyable retirement.
All right. Thank you so much to Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. That wraps up this April 13 edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear it again on our website at willag.org, on our smartphone website at m.willag.org. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio from the farming world at the University of Illinois.